I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where I speak with creative entrepreneurs, artists, and other insanely interesting people to hear their stories, learn about their molding moments, tipping points, and spectacular takeoffs. His growing feelings of cynicism and frustration with love led Nate Bagley on a search for answers to the questions of what true love really is and how to attain it. The search resulted in conversations with people who are experiencing these things on a daily basis, and it became the start of what is known today as the Lovumentary. Listen in as Nate talks to me about everything he's learned about true love. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by Selz. That's SELZ.com. If you're looking for a PayPal alternative to sell digital, physical products, and services, check out Selz. Selz allows you to add your products and sell from any site in minutes without any complicated setup or hassle, and they recently added the ability to give your customers a pay-what-you-want option. Many of the Unmistakable Creative listeners are already using the product and absolutely love it. Our other sponsor for today's show is FreshBooks, the simple online accounting solution for small business owners just like you who want to skip the headaches of tax time. No more hunting receipts, digging through invoices, or going through records one at a time. When I started working as a freelancer, my process for invoicing clients was disorganized, manual, and messy. Then I discovered FreshBooks. I tried it once, and I was absolutely hooked. With the click of a button, I could generate an invoice and send it right to my clients without having to track a million different attachments and documents. And it allowed me to keep track of exactly how much revenue I was generating, all in one place. If you're invoicing clients on a regular basis, FreshBooks saves you time and helps you get paid faster. It's kind of a no-brainer. And for a limited time, you can try it completely free for 60 whole days. That's 2 months to try it and see just how much more efficient it will make your whole process for invoicing clients. Visit getfreshbooks.com and make sure you enter the Unmistakable Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you support our show. Nate, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. You know, I came across your work by way of a friend of mine, and you know, it was interesting to look at what you guys are up to and think, you know, wow, okay, I think this is something that everybody needs to hear about. So tell us, you know, a bit about your story, your background, and kind of how that has led to what you have called the Lovumentary.
Well, I'm trying to think how far back I should go. This has been a project in the making for several years, at least in my brain. I think everybody has those ideas every so often, or those things that they're insatiably curious about, mm-hmm. but most people don't act on them. So for quite a while, I've had this idea of like what really makes an amazing relationship. What is it that goes into the relationships that people look at and go, "Oh man, I wish I had that." And I've been fortunate enough to be surrounded by a lot of happy couples growing up. But as I've been dating, I turn 30 next week, and as I've been dating over the last decade or so, I mean, my ultimate goal was to end up in a serious long-term relationship that, for me, I would get married, but that isn't everybody's goal. But I noticed that all of my relationships were not really panning out the way I had hoped. You know, they'd end up in quick breakups, or, you know, like the longest relationship I'd been in was about 6 months. And I was just like, what am I doing wrong? You know? And then I realized one day that maybe I should change my focus from what I was doing wrong to what other people were doing right, and see if I could, kind of mimic that. Maybe I was missing something. Have you ever heard of, do you know Sean Aker and mm-hmm, The Happiness Advantage?
Yes, we've had him here as a guest.
Oh, he's so phenomenal. So he talks about how if we study what is average, we will merely become average. Uh-huh. But he likes to study the bright spots, the outliers, the people who are amazingly happy, to find out if he can raise the happiness level of people as a whole. And I kind of wanted to take that same approach, but with couples. Mm-hmm. So I started interviewing couples and talking to them about a microphone, and I found that other people were having the exact same questions I was having. So I just started asking couples those questions, you know, what is it that made their relationship work? Why were they so happy together? And then I put a few of them online, and they were well received, and people were like, wow, you need to do more of this. And it's kind of just blown up since then. So that's kind of where we are now. That's the short version of the story.
All right. Well, obviously, we're going to make you tell the long version of this story. But before we do that, I mean, there's already plenty here that we can work with. So, you know,
I love that all of this started, you know, and I do want to actually spend quite a bit of time talking about your discoveries and your research, because I think that's the part that is actually quite fascinating and I'm personally curious about, because I can relate to a lot of what you've gone through. But there is something earlier that you said right at the very beginning. You said that there was, you know, you were insatiably curious about something, you decided to act on it. And I think that, you know, we all have that. But there's a distinction between people who act on that insatiable curiosity and the ones who don't. And yeah. I'm really curious, you know, what do you think separates those people? And then, you know, I mean, sometimes also I can't imagine there aren't hurdles once you act. And that's, you know, that's one of those things. But let's get into kind of, you know, how you get yourself to act on insatiable curiosity.
Yeah, that's the trick, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a good idea, but the idea is worth nothing unless you execute it. There's good ideas are a dime a dozen. But there, I feel like there's a certain level of insanity and there's a certain level of kind of, of brash courage that goes into being willing to walk away from a desk job, walk away from security, walk away from predictability, walk away from comfort and say, I'm going to throw myself into the unknown and take a risk. And, for me, I literally had to sit down with a friend one day and I realized that the worst possible thing that could happen to me, the worst thing, is that I would blow through all of my savings and I would have to move into my parents' basement and be that guy, the 30-year-old guy who's living in his parents' basement. And you know what? The worst possible thing happened, but I'm freaking happy. Like, I did blow through all my savings, but I got to fulfill a dream and it's turning into the possibility of being a real income for me, a real lifestyle. And not only that, but I feel that I'm impacting hundreds, if not thousands of lives, which is completely mind-boggling. It was the results from me taking that risk initially to compared what I thought they would be compared to what they are right now is just like, I can't even believe it. And one thing I realized is that there's a lot of competition for average out there. You know, most people are competing for middle management positions. They're competing for, you know, the salary positions. But there's not a whole lot of people competing for the big pie in the sky dreams. Mm-hmm. And so once you actually take that step and dive into the unknown and really kind of have a goal and work hard at it, the competition for fulfilling that goal is not as rough as it is in the regular workplace. At least that's what I've come to find out. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, I think that's such a refreshing perspective. The fact that, you know, there's a lot of competition to be average. That's so true.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody sees it that way. They see, you know, risk as such a daunting thing, but you know, when we had Stephen Kotler here recently, he was talking to me about flow states and he talked a lot about how, you know, risk, you know, takes you into a state of flow. And not only that, I think that there's, you know, risk is where people come to life. Like, I think that if you're
absolutely
sleepwalking, there's nothing that wakes you up more than taking a really, really big risk.
Well, I think the biggest risk people can take is to love, to bring it full circle. You know, love is a huge risk, at least loving big, loving too many people are safe in their love. Mm-hmm. One of the best pieces of love advice that I got over the last year was from this wonderful lady in Georgia. And she and her husband had been married for over 60 years. They had been around the world. They had done amazing things. And I said, "What, after all of your experiences, what's the best piece of advice that you could give us or give single people or people who want the love that you have?" And she said, "Don't be afraid to be the one who loves the most." And I think there's this stigma that if you're the one who cares less, you have more power in the relationship. And we crave that power. We don't want to get hurt. We don't want to open ourselves up. But man, when you can really open up your heart and take that risk and let yourself be loved and to love fully, that's what life is. That's like the most fulfilling thing you can experience in life is to be truly loved by somebody and to fully love somebody else. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do this. I think that's a perfect setup. I actually want to talk about what leads you to the conclusion that, okay, I have to figure this out. Like, you know, you kind of touched on you know, relationships that didn't last. I want to get into detail now, which you've heard my show, so you know that I'm going to drill you on all of
this. Yeah, drill me. Go right ahead.
You know, I mean, I can relate. You know, I'd gotten to a point where I thought, you know, I'm like, I'm going to settle. It's inevitable. Like it's going to happen and I'm just going to numb myself somehow from the fact that I have settled and this isn't what I wanted. And you know, that's a line that I have not crossed And that was my greatest fear, is that I would actually cross that line. Mm. But what I am really interested in is sort of the evolution of your life as somebody who is single and dating that leads to this sucks. Why can't I figure it out? And what causes you to transition into, okay, I'm going to go figure it out, and by asking people who've got it down. And what leads you to that point? Talk to us about that part of the journey.
So I come from a very conservative part of the country. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah, where in at least in my area, in the suburbs of Salt Lake, the neighborhoods are anywhere between like 70% and 85% or 90% Mormon. And there's a huge focus in that community on family. And most people get married fairly young. Mm-hmm. And I was 27, so about two years ago, my youngest brother got married at 23. And I have another younger brother who's 27 who just got engaged. And the majority of the people that I graduated high school with were married and had kids. And once you hit about 25, 26, 27 years old in this community, mm-hmm. culturally you're kind of looked at as a weirdo. Like, there's something wrong with you. Why aren't you married yet? That shouldn't you, like, family is the number one priority. And if you're not starting one, you're putting something off, or there's something weird about you. And, there was a lot of pressure there. And so I was really actively dating, because that was something that was important to me at the time, was starting a family. Mm-hmm. And I just kept failing and failing, and things wouldn't work out, and relationships would fall apart, and I'd be really excited about a girl, and we'd go out for like 2 or 3 months, and then it would fizzle out, or we would have a disagreement, and I would be like, this is just not working. And I kind of just reached this point where I realized that there was a growing group of people who were just like me, who had the same questions, who had the same frustrations, but nobody was really giving answers. I don't know if you've had this experience, but, you know, people who are in relationships say, yeah, it takes a lot of work, or yeah, so you just have to sacrifice when it comes to love. There's a lot of sacrifice involved, but nobody ever sat me down and told me what the love and what the sacrifice was. Mm-hmm. Nobody broke that down into detail. Nobody told me, you know, what that was all about. And, because all these other people that were my age kind of were feeling that same sort of, they were feeling ostracized like I was, and kind of feeling broken. I was like, you know what? I'm sick of this. I'm sick of these vague answers. I'm going to go find my own answers, and I'm going to go make people talk to me. And, I feel like if I can find answers for myself, then maybe it'll benefit somebody else in my position. Mm-hmm. And, I realized at one point that I wasn't getting any younger, that if I did wait much longer, that, you know, I had some savings built up from being a professional for quite a while, and I had no real obligations to a wife or kids or a mortgage. And I was like, it's now or never. I can either take this risk and go find these answers now and do something for the world and do something for myself, or I can put it off like everybody else does and let this idea fizzle and for the rest of my life wonder whether or not I could find those answers. And I just decided to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. And it's been the most eye-opening experience of my life, sitting down and talking to these couples now. So
cool. All right. So a lot of things here. I am really, yeah, really happy that you brought up the sort of cultural stigma of being in the community that you're in. And you know, being judged and you know, feeling a lot of pressure, because, mm-hmm. you know, as you probably know from some of the conversations you may have heard on the air here, I'm Indian, and I'm over 30. I'm 35.
Yeah, so you get it.
Oh, I get it more than you could possibly imagine. and I think that, you know, it's interesting. I think that we make a lot of bad decisions because of cultural stigmas. We make decisions. You know, I always say that this is the part that always. And it's such a hard line, because you're torn between two really important things. You know, people that you love and care about, you know, they, you know, I think their intentions are good.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet what you're torn with is the fact that they're not the ones who are going to live with the consequences of the choices that you make.
Right.
And I guess really, you know, that takes me to the question of, you know, how you overcome the cultural stigma and say, you know what? I'm not going to make my decisions based on what other people think. Because here's the thing, Nate, I think you and I both know in any one of these relationships that didn't work out, you could have forced it to get
absolutely.
The point where it fit and you fit square pegs into round holes and everybody around you got the outcome they wanted, but you didn't. And I want to know why you didn't and how you basically overcome that stigma. Because I think that what you're feeling in that moment, that is a universal feeling for anybody who comes in cultures or who grows up or is in a part of a culture where there is that kind of pressure.
You know, maybe it's maybe I feel a little too self-important. maybe I have this this fictionalized concept that I'm meant to do something big, or that I'm some sort of black sheep and I don't fit in. I know there's a lot of people who feel that way when they're surrounded by the culture that they came from, that they don't fit in. They're the square pegs in the round holes. And that's just kind of how I felt for a really long time. I remember coming out of college, I was really, really ambitious, and I was working at a software company, and my boss one day told me that my goals were too unrealistic and that I would never achieve them and that I needed to change them. And he's like, "You're going to fail. You're going to fail." And it infuriated me. And I'm like, now I will succeed because you told me I was going to fail. And then not a year and a half later, I was working at another job and I had to leave for a new opportunity. And that boss looked at me and told me, "Whatever it is that you do next, I hope it fails. I hope it fails." And I feel like growing up and going through living in this society that I didn't always feel a part of, and then going through my professional life and having people tell me that I wasn't capable of doing what I wanted to do, added fuel to the fire and kind of validated the fact that, like, yeah, I'm different. I'm not going to settle for average. I'm not going to settle for normal. I want big things for myself. I want good things for myself. I want to be in a really passionate, loving, caring, trust-filled relationship. I want to make a dent in the world. I want to influence people's lives. And I think that's just part of my character. And then I've tried to kind of imbue that in the people that I come in contact with, whether it's through my podcast or through my blog or through my just friendships or email exchanges. Like, I want people to know that they don't have to settle for average, because I refuse to settle for average. And I think you refuse to settle for average, from what it sounds like. And I think that's a beautiful quality. There's too many people who are willing to settle for average, and too many people who are totally oblivious to the fact that they are settling for average.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that is so true. And I think that's an epidemic almost.
Oh yeah.
Of the culture that we live in, because I mean, you know, when you settle for average, it's safe. Settling for average is easy. That's the easiest way, you know, out of any situation.
It absolutely is, because it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But as we talked about earlier, you know, taking that plunge, making that leap, that discomfort, that's where growth and life is, that risk. Life is risk.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, let me ask you this. I mean, are there, you know, you talked about the relationships that fizzled out and didn't work out. You know, were there things, you know, what did those relationships reveal to you?
A lot of things. I think that they revealed to me that people, including myself, are scared to. I was always scared to say no. I was scared to maintain a piece of my identity, to maintain my personal identity, who I was. A lot of times I would sacrifice who I was to try and make the person I was with happy. There was a sense of, I'm very conflict averse. So whenever conflict would arise, I found that I would panic and typically run instead of confronting it head on.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was ill prepared for a relationship because I never really had anybody sit me down and tell me what to expect. And I think a lot of people fit into that category. I feel like the majority of people base their behaviors off of the examples and role models that they have available in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And there just aren't a lot of really prevalent, vocal role models and examples of what a really healthy, beautiful, loving relationship looks like. So we're all basing our actions off of Hollywood
mm-hmm.
and off of a lot of, you know, dysfunctional relationships that are that we see in our lives, whether people are passive aggressive or manic or codependent. You know, if that's our example, that's how we live. That's what we consider to be normal. And that's what I considered to be normal. And it wasn't until I went out and started talking to these couples that I realized how backwards I had so many important things. I had completely, so I had a glimpse of what was possible, but I had no idea really until I saw it and how far off base and how ill-prepared I had been before for what I now strive for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes all the sense in the world. I think it's interesting that you bring up our lack of healthy role models for like, you know, healthy relationships, because I think that's something I think I see in every area of life. I don't think it just applies to relationships. I think that it's, you know, I think role models and models of possibility are something that we need a lot of. I mean, I think that that's, to me, that's what's fueled so much of you know, ordinary people going out and trying to do extraordinary things, kind of like what you're doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. The world needs better examples. That's definitely true.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, let's get into kind of, you know, how this evolved into what you call, you know, the Lovumentary. I mean, talk to me about that process. I mean, and then, you know, I do want to start getting into some of the specifics around relationships.
Sure. What part of the process do you want to know about exactly?
Well, talk to me about how, I mean, you said you just, you know, you start out and you know, you start going and asking couples questions. And, you know, obviously my guess is your first thought around this wasn't, you know, I'm going to just continue doing this to find answers. It just, again, you know, you start with insatiable curiosity. And to me, this is exactly, you know, it's very similar to the experience that I've had with building the show. And it's one of those things where, you know, the parallel to me is it's, you know, you keep adjusting to what the wave is doing, because I think that, you know, when you first, you know, go do the first interview, my guess is you weren't thinking of this huge project that it's turned into. So I'm curious, one, about the creative process behind, you know, what you've built and how it's led to what it has. And then I want to start talking about the insights that have been revealed, because I think that's the part that is really fascinating to me. And I'm sure a lot of people are very curious about, you know, what have you learned about healthy relationships?
Yeah. Well, I think as far as creatively, I have fallen in love with the stories. That's what's really driven me, is that every single couple, one of the really interesting things that I've learned along the way is that there are as many definitions of what love is as there are couples who are experiencing it. There is no recipe. There is no one solid recipe for true love. You get to decide what that is, what that means to you. And so getting to sit down with dozens, hundreds of couples and hear them tell their story of how, of what they've decided to create and call love as their own, it's been one of the most incredible things. And I started out, have you ever heard the Ira Glass clip about when you start creating art, you have this taste and your taste is impeccable, but your ability to create something that matches that taste is like super far off. And you have to just keep creating, like you listen to your first pieces of work and you're like, oh man, that sucks so bad. Yeah. So I mean, I was completely novice. I had never really conducted an interview before. I have no training in like psychology. I'm no expert in anything. I call myself an anti-expert, because I literally have no clue what I'm doing. I'm just really curious. And I talk to smart people who do know what they're doing and kind of translate their message through me. But yeah, anyway, I started falling in love with these stories, and I found that the more stories I recorded and the more I edited and the more I got used to asking the better questions, the better the project got and the more people enjoyed it. And it started to grow and it started to grow. And I had recorded about 25 episodes, and they were all fairly local in the West Coast, either between Utah, Idaho, and California. And then a mutual friend introduced me to Melissa Joy Kong, who had a similar goal. She wrote a bucket list a few years ago, and one of the items on her bucket list was to travel around the country and write a book after she had interviewed like 100 couples. And I was like, holy crap, like I've already started interviewing couples. You want to interview couples. You want to write a book. I want to do a podcast. I'd love a female voice on the podcast. If you want to team up, like, let's do a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had built up an audience. We launched a Kickstarter. We raised $30,000. We spent 90 days on the road. We actually met for the first time in person on the first day of our road trip. So it was kind of like a 90-day arranged marriage between the two of us. It was like we didn't know really what to expect. We spent 90 days on the road together and interviewed, I don't know, probably like 50 to 60 couples on the way, and drove 15,000 miles and met some of the most incredible people in the world. And from that, like, it's really started to evolve and develop into this really cool project with just some of the most beautiful stories I've had the pleasure of hearing. So,
mm-hmm. Well, talk to me about the Kickstarter piece. I mean, yeah, it's funny because from the way you tell it, it might sound like, oh, you know, Nate had a crazy idea and insatiable curiosity and, you know, somehow that magically turned into $30,000 on Kickstarter. And I think you and I both know that's not true. I'm very curious, you know, for personal reasons, how, you know, that piece of it worked. And then I want to start talking about the stories around the couples.
It was a lot of careful planning. Both Melissa and I have very generous friends and family and a fairly large network of people, and love is one of those things that people just get behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so Melissa did a whole lot of work generating some PR for us, and she did a whole lot of planning. We did a lot of planning together, and we launched, and then we just... Honestly, we launched and we hit the road. We didn't even wait for the Kickstarter. We reached our goal on the last day of our Kickstarter. So it was a 30-day Kickstarter, and we spent 30 days on the road before we even had the money to do the project. And we just kind of took the leap of faith once again. We're like, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this. So let's just hit the road, and we'll have confidence that people will pull through and get us the money that we need. And it happened. Mm-hmm. I think when people hear the stories and heard what we were trying to do, they were sympathetic, and there was also a lot of hard work that went into it. So,
mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get into the part that everybody probably wants to know about.
All right, let's do this.
What is it? You know, I mean, you've basically talked to all these couples. So start telling us the stories of the couples you've talked to. I mean, what you've learned about love is your perspective different after all of this? I mean, how is it changing the way you see the world? All of that. I'm so curious.
Yes, my perspective is incredibly different. My perspective of what love is and what it can be has completely turned upside down. It's interesting. I don't know if you've ever sat down with a couple and you've literally been able to feel the chemistry between them. Like it's palpable. The energy, the love that they have for each other is palpable.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had that experience?
No.
No. I'll tell you, when you get to sit down, I sat down with several couples and just had an intimate conversation with them about their relationship. And it just, sometimes you can just feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the most bizarre feeling, but it's the closest thing that I can explain to you that it would probably be a taste of what love can be like. I remember specifically sitting down with, Ty and Terry. They're a couple in Omaha. And they, oh my gosh, they're such amazing people. But we weren't even supposed to interview them originally. We had stayed the night in Kansas City the night before with some friends, and they had recommended, one of the guys there was like, hey, you should stay with my brother in Omaha when you get there tomorrow. And we're like, okay. So we showed up in Omaha the next day, and this kid's brother welcomes us into his home, and one of his roommates is like, oh, I love what you guys are doing. You should talk to my friends, Ty and Terry. And we're like, okay, give us their contact information. And we set up an appointment the next day to drop in at like 9 o'clock at their house and interview them for an hour. So we show up and like we instantly hit it off, and 20 minutes, 30 minutes goes by and we haven't even started recording yet. And we're like, oh man, we got to get this going. We know you guys have to get to sleep. And we started recording, and we wanted to be respectful of the time. So about an hour went by, and everybody at that point was like crying and like there was just this really strong feeling of just love and connection in the room. And we ended up recording for like 2.5 hours and becoming the type of friends that one of my favorite quotes is from the Muppets. There's a song sung by, I think it's Gonzo, and he says, there's not a word yet for old friends who've just met. And when you get to sit down and talk to a couple about about their most important relationship in their life, you get to experience what it's like to become somebody's friend, best friend, having just met them.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the, now I'm rambling. I feel like I need to tell a story.
No, keep going. This is great.
So Ty and Terry just have this amazing, amazing relationship, and they both make it their personal responsibility to make sure that the other person is just happy and fulfilled and feels amazing in life. And I think the best way to kind of articulate the way that their marriage works is to read a quick quote that Terry said about Ty. And this is kind of how she approaches her relationship on a daily basis. She said, this is so powerful. It gives me goosebumps every time I read it. But she said, at the end of Ty's life, I want him to be able to say that Terry was the greatest earthly blessing in my life, the best thing that ever happened to me, and that I'm a better man because of how she loved me. And that's the goal that I live with every day. That's how I want to love this man. Hmm. So she wakes up every morning, and the first thing on her mind is, what can I do so that at the end of his life, he can say, I'm the best thing that ever happened to him?
Wow.
And she does it, and he does it for her. And, you know, they make sacrifices for each other, and they show up for each other every day. And it was just evident in the way that they looked at each other and the way that they touched each other and the way they spoke about each other. And I think that's something that they've cultivated over their 30 years of marriage, close to 30 years of marriage, but it's something that everybody can have, mm-hmm. but it requires that sense of kind of, that it's a willingness to put yourself second and trust that the other person is going to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You know, I think some people may hear that and think, wow, that sounds amazing, but idealistic, right?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You said the willingness to put yourself second and the other person first, and it takes us back to that sort of power dynamic that we were talking about earlier. I mean, what about the people who don't do that, you know, and like, what about conflict? Because, you know, I can't imagine even when you're that in love, there's got to be conflict.
Yeah. Every couple experiences conflict. Every couple does. There's no couple on the planet that never experiences conflict of varying extremes, but there is going to be conflict regardless. But the difference between the people who experience conflict, who have amazing relationships, and everybody else is that the people like Ty and Terry, when they have a conflict, they realize that they're playing on the same team. Mm-hmm. They're not competing against each other. They're not fighting to win. They're not disagreeing to prove a point. They're disagreeing. They look at conflict as an opportunity to grow closer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they shared a lot of different experiences, like, you know, just throughout, I'm trying to think of a good example. We had one couple who experienced, like a child making decisions that they don't necessarily agree with, leaving their religion. Mm-hmm. Or there's people who have experienced incredible financial loss because of just bad decisions. Or people who've experienced infidelity, or who've experienced just seasons of depression. The couples who can look at those opportunities as a rally point, as an opportunity to come together and overcome the challenge together, rather than blaming each other and finding fault and making sure that the other person knows that they were the ones who screwed everything up. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. You know, even though they may not agree on something, they're still playing on the same team. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. Yeah, this is the part of the conversation I was really curious about, because I think that, you know, it's, let me ask you this, based on that, you know, I mean, obviously the conflict is always going to be there. There's, you know, sort of, you know, what you call the rallying points and the things that mold people into who they are for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. But some people are broken by those experiences, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some people are totally destroyed by those experiences. And, I mean, did you get a chance to talk to any people who were totally destroyed by those experiences, who were actually broken?
Who had been? Yes, absolutely.
And what, I mean, what did that reveal? Like, what kinds of insights did that, you know, give you guys?
I think the most interesting thing that I learned that I wish everybody in the world knew about love is that love starts with you. Mm-hmm. You cannot give something you do not have. And if you don't love yourself, if you don't love yourself first, if you don't take care of yourself first, if you can't make yourself happy, there's no way on earth that somebody else can make you happy. I think there's too many people who enter into a relationship and they say, oh, I hate myself. I don't think I'm pretty enough. I'm not good looking enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not funny enough. But if you will just love me, then everything will be okay. And it fixes everything. Mm-hmm. And I've realized that if you can't love yourself first of all, you won't be able to give the love necessary to have a really healthy relationship. And second of all, you won't be able to receive the love necessary, because think about being in a relationship with somebody and they just love you to the extent that it's almost unbelievable. It's almost too good to be true. And you start to doubt whether or not they're sincere. Mm-hmm. You know, this white knight comes in and sweeps a girl off her feet. And if she doesn't love herself and she doesn't believe she's deserving of that love, she starts to doubt that worthiness. And then all of a sudden she starts to self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. It is too good to be true. And then she won't accept the love. And then it turns into this impossible situation where he's trying to give. And obviously the roles can be reversed. But no matter how much he gives, it's never can be accepted because she doesn't feel like she deserves it, and it can ruin a relationship. So all of the people that I talk to that have incredibly healthy, happy relationships have been through a period of darkness, if you will, where they had to learn to love themselves. Mm-hmm. And they had to go through that self-discovery phase of what is it that makes them happy? What is it that they can do for themselves to make sure that they don't need to rely on somebody else for validation, to feel like they are worth something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they go through that when they're in the middle of their relationship. Sometimes it requires going through like a divorce or a really serious breakup that's a wake-up call. But the most fundamental thing about experiencing a truly healthy, loving relationship is that you have to be able to love yourself first. You have to be broken down. There's this guy named Jim in Boston that was single for over 50 years.
Wow.
And he was one of the most incredible guys we met. And he was, I think, single for 52 years. And he had been friends with this girl in college. But at the end of college, they were kind of interested in each other. But he wanted to go to Boston to work for Harvard. And she wanted to go overseas. So she did. And she got married. And she had a kid. And then, several years later, her husband passed away. And they had always kind of kept in touch, she and Jim. And she ended up coming back to the States. They reunited, and instantly they kind of just decided they wanted to spend the rest of their lives together. And one of the things he told me was that marriage will break you. A long-term relationship will break you down. It will completely destroy you. But the beautiful thing is that it builds you back up into a better version of yourself. And that just blew my mind to hear somebody who had been in, a lot of people aspire to be in relationships, but they aren't willing to wait 50 some odd years for the right one to come along. Mm-hmm. And he told me that he's like, I had kind of given up on the idea of being married. I was happy being single. I had found a way to be happy with myself, and I was happy with the life I had. And then when this woman came along, it changed everything. And I don't know. It made me realize, one, that it's worth waiting for, but two, man, he had himself figured out, and then marriage helped him rediscover himself once again and has made him into an even better man than he ever could have been by himself. So
amazing.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. One of the other things that is always interesting to me is sort of the end of the honeymoon phase of any relationship, right? You start out and it's like you're just completely infatuated with each other. You can't get enough of each other. And then it becomes normal. Like, it becomes part of your everyday life. Obviously that goes away, but is there a way to keep it? What did you learn about that?
There absolutely is a way to keep it. And I will tell you about that right now. I actually just sat down and had a really long conversation with two sex therapists. Mm-hmm. And they talked to me about, there is that state of, some people call it twitterpation or limerence, but that honeymoon phase is where all the chemicals and hormones are going crazy in your body and you're just totally sexually attracted to each other. You feel this wild chemistry. And you're right that the monotony of life sometimes hits us and we let that die down. Mm-hmm. And the chemicals do wear off, And basically what they told me is that phase, the honeymoon phase, that state of limerence fades for everybody. But passion, having passion in a relationship is a choice. Mm-hmm. it's not a reaction. It's not something that happens to you. It's something that you choose. And let me, I'll just give you some examples of this. There's one couple that we interviewed in San Francisco, Rahul and Sarah, and they said that every night before they go to bed, they look at each other in the eyes, regardless of whether or not they're fighting or on really good terms or exhausted or what, but they look at each other and they say, I love you and you're my best friend. And they said that has helped them keep their relationship in perspective for, you know, the decades that they've been together. Or there's a story of Josh and Jenny Solar, who live in Kansas City. And this is one of my favorite stories that I've heard along my journey. And they were driving a couple of months ago. They're driving down the road and it starts to rain, cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. And Josh pulls the car over. He and Jenny and their three kids are in the car. And he says, Jenny, get out of the car. And he's like, she looks at him and says, what? He's like, get out of the car. And she's like, it's raining. I'm not going to get out of the car. And he's like, come on, get out of the car. We're going to make out in the rain. And he turns around to the kids and he says, kids, do you want to get out of the car and play in the rain? And they say, no. And he says, okay, that's fine. Then you can sit here and watch me and mommy kiss. And he chose in that moment to, rather than keep driving or even complain about the rain, to make a memory, to create an intimate moment, to create passion in his relationship. This is the same couple that every night they wash their dishes together and send the kids off to do homework. And when they're done washing the dishes, they have a playlist of slow songs that they turn on and they dance like two or three slow songs together in the middle of their kitchen. There's another couple I talked to a few weeks ago who they decided that in their marriage, every time that they part ways, they kiss each other for 10 seconds or longer. So rather than just giving each other a peck, they make out, and they have chosen to keep the passion in their relationship through their actions and to invite that intimacy into their life rather than, I think there's a lot of people who, you know, they're tired or they're too busy or they're not in the mood and they reject the advances of their partner and they make excuses as to why the chemistry is not there anymore. But coming full circle back to these sex therapists, one of the things that they said was that, and this is interesting, I didn't know this before, but men experience desire before they experience arousal. Mm-hmm. And women, on the other hand, this is generally speaking, this is not a universal law, so I hope people don't get worked up about this. But for women, oftentimes it's the opposite. They don't experience desire until they experience arousal. And so I think I've seen a lot of complaints and heard a lot of complaints from men who get rejected when they try and make advances on their partner. And it's because, like, sometimes women don't realize that they want to be intimate until, like, they've leaned into it a little bit. You know, they get a kiss on the neck and they reject it and say, I'm too tired. Or do you get a kiss on the neck and you kind of go, oh, okay, like, let's see where this goes, you know? And so I think to keep that passion in your relationship, I know it's 100% possible because I've witnessed it. Mm-hmm. I haven't experienced it for myself, but I've witnessed it in these stories and in these couples. And what it requires is a level of awareness and a level of intentionality. You have to intentionally make it a priority to keep passion alive in your relationship. It doesn't just happen, but it is a choice you can make, and it's a powerful choice. But it's definitely something that you have to choose. Mm-hmm. It doesn't choose you. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, I love this because, I mean, so many of the things that you talked about, it reminds me so much of you know, a lot of what Sean Acor talks about, right? I mean, why I love Sean's work is that it is the most pragmatic happiness advice I've ever heard.
It so is, isn't it?
There's no, you know, dropping acid in, you know, some foreign country or meditating at an ashram in India or, you know, selling everything you own. It's in, you know, simple day-to-day things. And, you know, I mean, sounds to me, from what you've discovered, a lot of that happens in relationships as well.
Absolutely. It's simple daily choices. The choice to be grateful. Mm-hmm. You look at John Gottman of the Gottman Institute. He wrote the book, The Seven Principles That Make Marriage Work. Mm-hmm. Incredible book. But one of the things he says in there is that gratitude is one of the most important principles that you can practice in a relationship. And people get used to being provided for. They get used to being taken care of. And we forget to thank the people who are most important to us in our life for the things that they do on a daily basis. You know, thanks for emptying the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. Thanks for going to work so we have, you know, can put food on the table. Thanks for making the food that is on the table. And constantly expressing that gratitude is one of the easiest, simplest ways to keep passion alive in a relationship and to maintain a really strong friendship. I don't know any person who doesn't like to feel appreciated, mm-hmm. but that's one really simple thing that goes a really long way that we just let fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing how simple the principles are, but it doesn't necessarily make them easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think that, you know, some of these things just have to become habits. They have to, you know, and that requires, you know, a commitment to change on your part. Like when I'm, you know, even when we talk to somebody about changing their behavior in any aspect of their life, it's kind of like, yes, it's not going to happen instantly. It's not like you hear something on the podcast and suddenly magic happens.
Right.
You know, a lot of these things are things that get cultivated over time. You're planting seeds, and as you water those seeds, they grow.
Absolutely. So if you're a single person right now, like I'm single, I don't know how single you are, mm-hmm. but
we're not going to talk about that on the air.
No. Okay. That's fine. but single people often think that, oh, like when I get into a relationship, then I'm going to change my behavior or these things will just come naturally to me. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I've really been focusing on personally, because I am no expert when it comes to love, you know, I'm just gleaning from these people who have it figured out, is that I need to start cultivating those things now. Mm-hmm. The happiest people who are in relationships, if you took them out of their relationships, they would still be incredibly happy because they have learned the simple practices that bring happiness into your life. They've learned to be grateful for the people that surround them. They've learned to serve other people because that service brings a sense of fulfillment and a sense of connection. They've learned to trust other people and to be open to love and to open to new experiences and spontaneity. And those are the things that now that I've realized that's what's important as a single person, I'm trying to cultivate in my life. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to be a more grateful person. I'm trying to like express gratitude to the people who are truly important to me. I'm trying to look for an opportunity to serve somebody every single day. And when you cultivate those habits in your life, not only are you a happier person, but you're so much more prepared for a relationship down the road. Mm-hmm. And if you are in a relationship now, like create a list of things that make you happy and things that you can do better and start ticking them off a list every single day, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's those little things when people start to really believe that that's what makes a difference and they start to invest in them on a daily basis, I think you'll see a lot of relationships either turn around or get raised to a level that they didn't even think was possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of your own personal experience, I mean, I think that's where we're going to turn this now and really start wrapping things up from here. I mean, obviously you've gotten a lot of perspective and insights, and I'm curious kind of how it's altered your own behavior and your own dating experiences. I mean, come on, Nate, you didn't think I was, even though I won't talk about mine, I'm definitely going to ask you about yours.
Oh, I see how it is. You're going to twist my arm.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely changed. One of the most interesting things that I heard along the way, I can't remember this guy's name, but super interesting guy. He was a pastor at a church in LA. And he said that you play for the league you practice for. And there's a lot of people out there who are willing to play in the little leagues and because that's what they practice for. But there's only a small handful of people who are practicing for the World Series. And I think for me, my dating behaviors have changed in that I've started practicing for the big leagues, where in the past I was just kind of like satisfied with whatever came along. I was happy to bat in the little leagues. Now I'm looking not only to create myself into an all-star who can play at the World Series, I'm looking for somebody else who's got that mentality as well. Mm-hmm. And it means that the pickings are a little bit slimmer. Which is probably why I'm still single, but I'm happy being single. And I think I'm more prepared and more able to recognize, the right one when she comes along. Mm-hmm. So, well, I don't know if that gives you the detail you want, but
that's more than sufficient. We're not going to drill you too much on your personal life. But, I really, Nate, I mean, this has been really, really cool. It's been a really eye-opening look into a subject that, you know, I personally am incredibly curious about because, like, I didn't, go into this expecting to come out with the formula for love, or, you know, a ton of answers. I mean, I think that what you have given us, are insights and questions to ask ourselves, which, you know, I think that that's really, you know, one of the most important things you can do. I'm realizing so much of this is a personal and internal journey as well.
Right. You know, you mentioned early on in the podcast that one of your biggest fears is that you're worried about settling. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking about that as we've talked a little bit, and I wanted to kind of encourage you to think about that. Really, the only way you can settle is by selling out on yourself and by letting yourself compromise. I think settling in love is really when you put a cap on the amount of love you're willing to give. I think each one of us has an unlimited potential for love, like that we are the vessels of love and we can give so much love. We can give an infinite amount of love. And I think when we decide to settle, it's because we filter ourselves, we put a cap on the amount of love we're willing to express and give. Mm-hmm. And granted, you need to wait for the right one and find the right person. But once you do, don't be afraid to go big. Mm. And I don't think you'll regret it.
Well, you know what, Nate? I'm not going to ask you any other questions because I think that that makes a poetic way to sum up our conversation. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with our listeners here at Unmistakable Creative. I only wish we had been able to air this on Valentine's Day. The timing would have been so beautiful.
It would have been beautiful, wouldn't it have?
Yeah.
But every day is a good day to love. So awesome. I'm sure whenever this airs, it'll be great. Awesome. And thank you for doing what you're doing for the world, man. I love what you guys are doing, and I think it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. And for those of you guys listening, I know this has been a little different than what we normally put on the air. I hope you really enjoyed it. And we will wrap our conversation with that.
This episode of The Unmistakable Creative has been brought to you by Selz. That's SELZ.com. If you're looking for a PayPal alternative to sell digital, physical products and services, check out Selz. Selz allows you to add your products and sell from any site in minutes without any complicated setup or hassle. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, a ton of Unmistakable Creative listeners are already using the product and absolutely love it. Our other sponsor for today's show has been FreshBooks, the cloud accounting solution built for small business owners just like you who want to skip the headaches of tax time. If you're a freelancer or a business owner who is sending invoices to clients on a regular basis, FreshBooks helps you reduce that process to the click of a button. It helps you save time and get paid faster and track revenue all in one place. And for a limited time, you can even get a free 60-day trial. That's 2 whole months to try the product. So make sure you enter the Unmistakable Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you support our show.
You've been listening to the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. Visit our website at unmistakablecreative.com and get access to over 400 interviews in our archives.